Welcome to Pitch Forward, a podcast collaboration between the business of cannabis and Leaf Forward, the global launchpad for cannabis startups. This season of Pitch Forward will feature innovators and entrepreneurs building on the success of Canadian cannabis and taking legalization globally. Business of Cannabis is the award-winning media company that provides insights into the companies, brands, people, and trends driving the global cannabis industry. I'm your host, Brett Chang, and I'm joined by my co-host and Leaf Forward co-founder, Alex Blumenstein. Find out more about Business of Cannabis at businessofcannabis.ca. Hey, Alex, how's it going?
It's going really well. Glad to be back in the studio.
Yeah, it's always nice to be here. We have a great guest for you today. His name is Harrison Newlands. He's from Hoshi. Alex, you're familiar with Harrison.
Yeah, I mean, I've known Harrison for a while, good friend of Leaf Forward, always been supportive of some of our startups, a great mentor in our program. And he's got a long history with the cannabis industry, was one of the founding team members at Fire and Flower. Prior to that, he was with Emblem. So has a long track record and a really great understanding of the Canadian industry. And what the group at Hoshi did was they brought together that expertise and said, how do we use this and leverage it into other markets? So they put together a really strong team of people who have done really well in this space and taken that elsewhere. So I think it's a really good story, especially around this time, you know, a year plus into legalization, where the Canadian market is starting to look, you know, not as exciting for investors and not as exciting for new businesses because of a number of challenges we're facing. So speaking to a company like this, which we're speaking to all companies who are operating internationally, to see how they're really taking these hard skills which they've learned here and applying it to other markets, I think is going to be really informative and really instructive for, you know, all sorts of people who are listening looking to enter new markets.
I agree. And what I think is great is that there's always this concern that once the U.S. market opens up, that these Canadian companies will just disappear, that they'll be eaten up by larger, better capitalized U.S. businesses. And what's great to see with Hoshi is that that I don't think will be the case simply because they have the expertise. They have that knowledge and that know-how that they can export. And I think that's the future for all Canadian cannabis companies, which is how do we take everything that we've learned in Canada and apply it to other markets where they're starting from scratch? They don't really know how to grow cannabis, how to build a brand, how to retail cannabis, what the regulation should look like. And so taking that Canadian expertise and bringing it globally, I really do think is the future of the industry here and a good moat for us when it comes to competing against other countries that are moving in the direction of legalization.
Yeah, I can definitely see them being a great Canadian success story as they're taking sort of a more incremental approach as opposed to the bigger players who are going big here and going big everywhere and spending a lot of capital to do so. And I think it's also just an interesting comparison made to the U.S. markets about how opening up a U.S. market could wipe out Canadians. But I think it's actually, you know, a really non-threat, especially when you look at all these other markets which are opening up. Because if you're an American operator and you're saying, you know, I'm based in California now, you've got 50 states to conquer, right? So even if it opens up, there'll still be state-by-state regulations. So they're going to go into each. So it's actually a very unique Canadian story that we have this first mover advantage. And we can export that to, you know, other countries around the world. Well, Americans, you know, and I don't mean this in too negative a way, but are traditionally focused within their own borders for, you know, a number of, you know, socio-political economic reasons.
Well, I don't blame them. There's 300 million people in the country, yeah. Right? That's a big market. Okay, well, that's great. And I guess without further ado, we'll get into the interview with Harrison Newlands.
Let's roll it.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for joining us again to this episode of Pitch Forward. Today, we are joined by Harrison Newlands, who's the Director of Strategic Relations at Hoshi. Harrison, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Our pleasure. So I guess we'd love to begin by you just telling us a bit about Hoshi and what you do.
Yeah, so Hoshi was created by some of the leading cannabis entrepreneurs from the Canadian market and I guess North American, and guys behind Metrum, Fire and Flower, as well as some other companies such as Emblem, GrowWise, which I guess are the same. But what we all came back together and we looked at the international opportunity emerging outside of North America. And with that, we saw a massive opportunity, especially in Europe and some of the Latin America regions that were relatively untapped. You saw companies like Canopy, Aurora, Tilray, the big boys going out and building these international portfolios. But there was no company specifically focusing on just the European region that we saw. More and more have started to emerge over the last little while. And as such, we thought that would be a unique opportunity to leverage our skills and find local partners on the ground to be able to work with them so that they don't make the same mistakes that we did here in Canada. And having guys as partners that have been from the cultivation side to the clinic side to building out online software to full operational cultivation, grow ops, greenhouses, retail, we felt that the tools that we would bring to any market that we kind of laid our eyes on would benefit not only that market itself, our company, but also our local partner. Very partner oriented.
Thanks. It sounds like a really interesting model, exporting what we've learned here in Canada, being a first mover as the first G7 country to legalize. Can you maybe get into a little bit more of the detail of the business model, maybe a little bit specifically where in Europe you're targeting and who your customers are? Can we get into where you're at, where you're going after licenses, all of that?
Yeah, absolutely. As we were a private company, I might leave some off the table, but I could dive into our most important assets and kind of the strategy and plan.
Please do.
So in doing so, we wanted to bring that best-in-class, all the best-in-class capabilities that we learned from the Canadian market to be able to implement them with a local partner. So in any market we go to, we're not going there trying to be the big boy and dominate the whole market and take up the market share. We want to work with a local partner who understands the regulations, the law, the government relations, everything, and we're going to come in and help them set up the grow up, help them set up how to distribute the product, where they're distributing the product. So right away, we found a partner who was a late stage applicant in Portugal. So a very good market climate to be able to grow. Wages are low, and it's already in the EU. So it makes distribution and all the certification that you need a lot easier being over there. And we felt that gave us a leg up on the Canadian companies looking to outsource or export their product and import it into Europe, because that's something we're seeing a lot of when we took this kind of step back approach. When we looked at all these Colombian companies that were, they could grow cheap, they could grow an abundance of product, they had the perfect climate, the wages were low, it was a win-win. But their biggest thing was, okay, now where do you sell it? How do you move that product? Very few of them have been able to move that, other than for R&D purposes, out of the actual country itself. So until that kind of, that whole thing comes into focus and a company down there gets an EU GMP certification or does a large amount of export for distribution, we thought being in Europe was very beneficial, especially with the cultivation asset. And that's why I think that Tilray, Aurora, and Flower feel the same way entering that that Portuguese market.
So I think that's interesting in how you determined which markets to enter and how you narrowed down on your partners geographically. Maybe you could speak a little bit further about how you actually select local partners. I mean, we've seen and read about, every country who has some sort of liberalization of their cannabis laws. You have, dozens, hundreds of people who are saying, we're the right local partner. We have these insider roots to government. We have these insider roots to cultivation. How do you, as an organization, weed through all of the opportunities you have to choose a strong, effective operator on the ground?
Yeah, so effectively it goes just like any investment opportunity that we'd have. A company would come to us, an individual, they'd bring us a deck, they'd tell us their plan, their strategy. Obviously, being in the cannabis industry 3 years, everyone seems to know someone, so you get the stories of, oh, I know a government official, it's going to speed along the process, it's going to do this, that. We tend to stay away from opportunities like that, and we tend to go towards opportunities where, after we have that deck and the information we need, we turn around, do our own research, we speak to the government relations staff we have, lawyers, everyone else, assess the market on a number of different variables, and whether it's medical or recreational or leaning towards that. Also, where would you move the product? What style license is it? So obviously, outside of North America, there's not many retail opportunities to that degree of a full-on dispensary. You can set up these clinics or these hemp CBD stores, especially in Europe, where we didn't think there was a real moat around that. So we could do the clinics, but in all the markets we've gone, so I'll just label out the markets. Portugal is a cultivation asset. Malta, we use that as kind of the door and entrance to the EU. If we were to bring product from anywhere else, so that's going to be our EU GMP certified lab. That allows for import, distribution, processing, pretty much everything other than cultivation. At the same time, we looked at a market that's newly coming online, such as Mexico as well in Latin America. We thought that was one of the most appealing assets. We're just waiting for the regs and legislation to drop. We think that would be within the next couple of weeks. that's kind of the outlier in our portfolio, being outside of our main focus in Europe. But we saw it as such an opportunity that if everything started to move and fall into place, that we didn't want to be a late-stage mover there. So we've already had conversations with numerous market-leading companies throughout North America who are very interested from the retail standpoint, from a clinic standpoint, from the software platform standpoint, right through to the processors and cultivation. So that when that opportunity comes, we feel that we can tie in the right partners to be able to immediately get in that market, act, and move fast.
Harrison, you emphasized the learnings from the Canadian experience and how you can apply those to your partners around the world. What do you think the biggest learning is and the biggest value add is that you can offer them?
Well, it really depends on what aspect of the license they're at. So in the UK, we're applying for an import distribution license, basically a narcotics license that allows you to bring in the product and then distribute it. The same thing in Poland. So we actually don't, well, in Poland and Czech, it's my belief that we don't actually need anything physical on the ground, so there's no cost. So really that comes down to finding the right partners to help you distribute. So in going in that market, we want distribution partners, people that are going to help us move the product once we bring it in and go through all the leaps and bounds just to get it into the country. Whereas Portugal, in looking at that, we looked at how far along the company was in the licensing stage, what they really needed, and what they really lacked was the knowledge on how to build a greenhouse, the capital required, the staff needed, and the whole layout of the facility, right down to the lab, extraction, processing, everything else, clean rooms.
Can I ask practically, I mean, does this mean you and your team are on planes every week? Is there a lot of on-the-ground work, or is this more of providing, you know, written instructions? How hands-on, how dirty do your hands get?
Yeah, so it changes on a weekly basis. So it started out that we were all just in our office here applying for licenses and applications around the world. And as such, there wasn't much traveling. But then once these licenses started coming online, we have guys traveling, I'd say, every other week and staying for extended period of times in any such market that I've listed. And in doing so, they have kind of leveraged that experience and started building out teams in the markets that we are in and that we're already starting to do construction and build outs and have a hiring construction managers and project managers to oversee it. So it really depends. And that's the main reason you want a local partner. Somebody that when you're not there can keep everything moving forward, the project at hand, laying out the tasks that need to be done. And then here at headquarters, we can kind of oversee and make sure everything's moving along.
As much as you can disclose, how does the model work in terms of you working with your partners? Do you take equity in them? Do you make investments in them? What does that look like?
Mostly it is an equity investment to date. We bring the capital, the resources, the SOPs, we call them BICs as well, best in class. And from that, yeah, we've really leveraged our experience. It's very rare that any of these guys want to just give up equity for knowledge and experience. So we tend to bring sweat equity as much as we bring capital.
Right. And is it sort of, I don't know how much you can get into this either, but is it sort of a private group of investors? Do you bring in new money for every deal? Can you talk to us a little bit about sort of like the capital allocation structure?
Yeah, as of right now, we did the seed round, family, friends, and then we did one other round and we haven't raised money since. Obviously, with the number of licenses and opportunities coming online and building out some of these, we might look to do a raise in the near term, I'd say in like the next 6 to 8 months. But as of right now, we have a pretty good runway into next year.
Great. I'm curious maybe if we can talk about sort of like the broader trends here. Canadian market saw really sky-high valuations. Everything is coming down to earth, and it's coming down to earth pretty quickly.
A little scary, isn't it?
So I guess the question is, when you're looking at international markets, do you see much more reasonable valuations, or are they almost in an earlier stage where valuations are too high? And then a second question that goes with that is, do you see a lot more Canadian capital wanting to go internationally rather than remain domestic?
Yeah, so I think in answering that question, the best way to do so is in looking at the Canadian market. There's been these cycles. There was the cultivation, and how did you evaluate cultivation? It came back to capacity. Well, how much could you grow? So if I had 80 acres, you would run the capacity numbers on that, and that would determine my evaluation. Then it went from the cultivator to the retail. I think the next phase of the Canadian market will be brands, improving brands and revenue, and that will distinguish the companies. Whereas I see the Canadian LPs not drawing the majority of their capital or their focus from the Canadian market. I think they're going to start looking outside because all the investor money who stayed behind all these started to flow to the U.S. And that's when you saw the run-up in the U.S. names. And now they're kind of leveling off because they're in that. They skip the brand stage because the brand stage down there, they don't have the same requirements or regulations as we do up here. So they went straight to the number of revenue. So everyone's waiting to see who's doing what they're doing with that capital. Are they putting that capital to good use and everything else? And at the same time, on the international stage, I think a lot of people have seen that Latin America story, and it's now at that revenue point where it's, okay, well, how much money are they bringing in? Where are they selling it? And what are they generating with this? And I think that's why you've seen them slow off. But in the European market, I see the European market as a whole picking up. And that's where a lot of the money is going to refocus. You have a bunch of the big banks over there, a bunch of the big high net worth individuals starting to look at these, starting to capitalize some of these opportunities. And then I haven't even looked at Asia or anywhere over there anytime soon. But you hear Australia, New Zealand, I think there's going to be a lot of waves made there over the next 2 years.
Sure, absolutely. Something I'm just curious about at a more general level is, you know, the whole theme of season two of Pitch 4 is about international companies, some of which are, you know, their whole teams are operating in the countries which they operate in. But there's a number, just like you, who have head offices in Canada and then operate elsewhere in the world. Can you speak to a little bit more of just the general challenges which are faced when you're dealing with, you know, time differences, distance, language barriers? How much yeah. does that weigh on your business?
Quite a bit when you're dealing with not only the time, because the time, it's, you could always figure that out. It's probably one of the more relatively easy ones. But the language barriers, and especially if you don't have somebody on the ground that can communicate effectively, or there is such a language barrier, they're not relatively that good at speaking English or whatever else. Communicating over a conference call, you get the random noises. It's not as clear and as perfect as you'd like, which makes it extremely difficult to be able to fully comprehend and understand what's going on and if they need something. But you could always fix that with having a good local partner on the ground and with emails.
Got it. And maybe what about sort of government challenges? Is there, I know you obviously probably do a lot of this through your local partners, but what's been sort of like the reception from regulators being, you know, the Canadians coming in and trying to, you know, have a big footprint within their industry? Are you being welcomed? Are you being incentivized? Or is it the opposite?
That was the reason. Yeah, so this was the reason we actually went with local partners, because we didn't want it to be the Canadian guys who had been doing this before coming in and buying up all the market share, like I said, those big guys. So we never wanted to be like a Canopy. We never wanted to be like an Aurora or Tilray and come into this market and just own the whole market and be that Canadian company or that international company that just coming in and making a statement. We want that local partner. We want to work with them to actually create jobs there, to stimulate the economy. And the perfect example is in Portugal, our local partner on the ground there on a daily basis, close with the government, working hands in hand. We're stimulating the small economy, so the mayor there is excited. Everyone knows about us, that we're coming there and what we're doing. So it's really that partner-oriented approach that we're taking. It's not Hoshi International coming in and doing everything. It's Hoshi International coming in and helping.
There's a lot of markets coming online now. Which ones are you most excited about, both on in terms of the cultivation work you're doing, but also just general either medical market or recreational market?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not as excited about Latin America. I don't see Canada allowing import anytime soon. And if they did, the Canadian ecosystem of the cultivators, all the jobs they created would be wiped out because you can never produce for that cheap. So for now, they're kind of in my blind spot. I'm really focused on that European market. I think there's so much growth and opportunity there based off population, based off usage and the numbers we've been running on our side. And even the cost per gram, it's way higher at the wholesale level than anywhere else we're seeing. But I don't want to leave out Australia, New Zealand. I think they're close behind in the fall in line. New Zealand's referendum, mistake me if I'm wrong, I think it's in March or May of this year. I think Australia is going to be close behind. Their capital city, Australia, in Australia, I think just went fully rec adult use, without the federal kind of regulations. So you're seeing that U.S. focus where the states are doing it, but it's on the federal level, it's not. And then no one can ignore the opportunity in the U.S. I think with the bills that are in the House right now or the Senate, there's so much opportunity there. If a state or the banking bill passes, or if we see federal legalization, I think you're going to have another massive run here.
Got it. One last question. What's Hoshi? What does that mean?
You pulled this out. It means, I believe it turns out, it, in the Japanese translation, it is star.
Okay, great.
Well, Harrison, you're my star. Thanks so much for joining us today. Appreciate it. And best of luck with Hoshi.
Not a problem. Reach out anytime. Always a pleasure speaking to you guys. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Harrison. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening today to this episode of Pitch Forward. If you like this show, you will love the rest of what's available on Business of Cannabis. Find them on Twitter at BOFC_Canada or their website, businessofcannabis.ca. Until next time, we are Leaf Forward, Alex and Brett.
A note to our listeners, Leaf Forward Accelerator Fund 1 may or may not have a financial interest in some of the companies which you've heard today.
This is Jay Rosenthal, co-founder of Business of Cannabis. This is a Business of Cannabis production.